Hi, everybody. I'm Bea Cohn-Frenos, and welcome, welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And it is a good thing, my friends, when we realize that we actually need to reach out and ask for help. And it really looks as if the stigma of therapy and counseling seems to really, really be changing. There have been a number of articles in the New York Times that really encourage people, encourage readers, that when things start to get really off track in your life and your relationships, that the very best thing that you actually can do is reach out and ask for help. And of course, my friend Lori Gottlieb, in her book, Maybe You Should Talk to Somebody, in fact, in the New York Times about a week ago, and I'm going to tackle this article a little bit later in the show today, a friend program to also be there. Of course, this article is about chat bots, artificial intelligence. But, you know, the reality is that we are going through a really, really challenging time over and above the usual day-to-day issues. I mean, we're looking at 350 million people worldwide who are suffering from depression. And with everything that has been going on with the coronavirus, I am sure that that number has absolutely gone through the rooftop in the United States. And this is about a year or two ago statistic. And I'm sure that this number is also a little low. 60 million people, adults in the United States, which translate into 1 in 5 Americans, are suffering from depression. 40 million adults suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. So what to do when we do our best, we're exercising, we're meditating, and yet things just don't seem to be able to get on an even keel. If we're looking at suicide attempts by young people, and I every single week when I mention this statistic, it really does kind of freak me out. I mean, young people, their attempts at suicide have quadrupled over the past 6 years, and you kind of wonder, what is that all about? Is it about being shamed? Is it about being bullying? I mean, I'm sure that there are a lot of studies that are really looking into why young people are wanting to end their lives. And since 2011, there has been a 40% increase nationally for self-poisoning also by young people. You know, I think about when I was really young, I would play in the streets with my friends. We didn't have play dates. We played volleyball and baseball and went to the schoolyard. And of course, my being a competitive tennis player, I would go with my father to the tennis courts. Life seemed a lot easier during those times. And the suicide rate for children ages 10 to young adults 24 increased by 56%, and homicide rates by, as I say, the so-called intimate partner increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017, which translates into four women every single day are killed by their partner. And, you know, I was talking to a colleague this morning, and when you think about it, there are more podcasts that deal with self-help issues and shows and books, and yet we don't seem to be able to get a handle on our mental health. The divorce rate, 48% of people who are marrying for the first time end up divorcing. For second marriages, 67% of people who are hoping that their second marriages are going to be better than their first marriages, they too end up in a divorce court. And people are really surprised, you know, when I'm giving lectures around the country, I'll say, well, what do you think is the divorce rate for third marriages? And many people will think it's low, and then some people in the audience will think it's high. But the reality is that 74% of couples who are marrying for the third time, they too end up getting a divorce. And of course, what I have discovered, and you've heard me say this over and over and over again, and today is the 303rd Ask Beatty show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have discovered through research in my book and through my practice, which is now over 35 years that I have been practicing as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. And of course, you know that I have a private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. Of course, these days, all of my sessions, of course, are either on Zoom or they are on the phone. But again, despite all of the self-help media, there are fundamentally, and I really want you to take this in because this is good news, but this is good news that I need for you to really, really think about seriously and put into use. That if you are ever, if any of us are ever, ever hoping to have a successful, healthy relationship, the first thing we need to do is to make sure that each of us is in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, and that we deal as best as we can with our so-called unfinished business, usually beginning in our family of origin and our skeletons in the closet, so that we are really in a good place where we're able to live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And I think that a lot of people, at least this has been my experience, would really like to bypass this step. And they would like to get on the dating sites, whether it's the virtual dating sites or whether or not they would like to hire a matchmaker or they'd like to meet somebody. Of course, these days it's very difficult to be meeting anybody face-to-face socially. I think they'd like to bypass this step and hope that maybe they are going to meet somebody who will either save them or make all of their internal wounds better. And yet that just absolutely doesn't work. So that if you are looking to find and maintain and sustain a healthy relationship, deal with yourself first. Feel great about yourself. Feel confident about yourself. And not only is that much more attractive than somebody who is depressed and anxious and needy, but what you will find is that the relationship will really be the icing on the cake, and that you will be the cake, and that you will have the solid, solid foundation. So whether or not it's dealing with daddy issues or mommy issues or substance abuse or early child sexual abuse or problems of any kind, it's not that we can change our history. We cannot make what happened or did not happen go away. But what I have found over all of these years is that addressing all of these issues and finding a way, finding the best possible way, not perfect, but the best possible way to emotionally work through what did and did not happen in our lives puts us in a really, really great position, not only for ourselves, because there are people who don't want relationships, and that's okay too. But if you are wanting a relationship, just make sure that you are in a solid, solid, healthy, good place yourself. So that's number one. And of course, number two is that each of us need to find a way to become students of healthy relationships. We really do need, despite all the books, despite all the podcasts, despite all the shows, to really be clear for ourselves what ingredients actually go into a healthy relationship. And of course, number three, and I'm actually so proud of this. I did research with 450 people a number of years ago in the Providence, Rhode Island, and Boston area. And through the research, I developed a 10-step formula. And I'm a very bottom-line person, and this formula really works. And it's been used successfully by thousands and thousands of people around the world to help you assess who's right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And it's going to take some time, not a week and not a month and not 90 days, to really find out who your partner is. And if you go through this three-pronged process, I promise you that you are going to be in a position where you're going to feel and you're going to be educated. You are going to feel empowered with knowledge, and you are definitely going to keep yourself safe, which is what it is all about. You know, and other things, and I haven't mentioned these lately because we've been so concerned what's happening with the coronavirus and the impact that it has had on all of us. But again, remembering to eat well, the plant-based diets, the fruits, the vegetables, the grains, the fish, the nuts, and the exercise. I think that a lot of people, because we have been socially isolated, have stopped exercising, have been eating more and gaining weight. So now that some of the constraints are being lifted and cities are opening up, give yourself an opportunity and give yourself permission to start to exercise. And we do not need to go to health clubs. You know, it's interesting. I used to go to the club, the health club, about two or three times a week, where I would go on the treadmills and lift weights. And what I've had to do, of course, is that I have the weights at home, and I've been walking around the block and walking in Riverside Park now that the weather is nice almost every day, and the weight training has continued. And I've discovered a lot of things that we actually don't need that we thought that we did. So remember the importance of exercise, and for people who enjoy yoga and meditation. And of course, having supportive people in your life. And a lot of people have felt so socially isolated. And it's been a terrific thing to be able to Skype and to do Facebook Live and to Zoom, so that you don't feel so alone and that you feel that you have a connection. And of course, this means to eliminate toxins. And I'm not just talking about chemical toxins, but that includes toxic people, including family members that make us crazy. You know, I have a patient who unfortunately grew up in a very dysfunctional, very, very toxic environment, where she was abused by her mother and her father emotionally and verbally and even physically. And she still feels the need, perhaps out of guilt, perhaps out of hoping that her early childhood situation had been different, to keep in touch with a very, very destructive, critical, toxic mother. And what we have found was that the more contact she has with her mother, the worsening her depression becomes. So we've tried to work out a game plan where she can have some contact, because she feels that she cannot abandon her older mother, who is quite aged at this point, while at the same time protecting herself from her mother's wrath. So it becomes a bit of a juggling act. And of course, positive visualization and dancing and listening to music. These are all wonderful things for our mood. For people who enjoy herbal teas, that is also something that can be very, very calming, aromatherapy, essential oils. And, you know, there was a piece in the New York Times, and I really loved it. This was a couple of months ago, and the quote was, is that science offers a simple and effective way to bolster our own emotional health. And you know what that is? It is to help yourself start by helping others. And I think that that is really a truth that we should all definitely, definitely take in. But the reality is that the impact of the coronavirus is still very, very much with all of us, and people are still extremely concerned. Can I pay my rent and buy food? Am I going to lose my job? And look at how many businesses, national businesses and corporations, are closing. And as I walk down the streets on the Upper West Side, you see building after building and business after business where they are not going to be able to reopen. And of course, there's still the concern. What if I do contract the virus? And I know that in my area on the Upper West Side, in New York City, people have been very, very compliant. Everybody seems to be wearing masks. Of course, we cannot go into stores without masks. And what I've been observing is that people really are keeping the social distance, which is why the coronavirus numbers, thank goodness, are falling in New York State. And also, you know, concerns about health insurance, particularly if you had a job and you had health insurance benefits and you lost the job, what is going to happen? What is going to happen if I actually get sick? And if I do have insurance, will my insurance cover catastrophic illnesses? Many people never dreamed that they would be applying for unemployment insurance. And of course, this takes a long, long time for a lot of this to get into place. And what we found, too, is that self-help hotline calls are surging. And I see that as a really, really positive thing, that people are depressed and afraid and angry and scared, and that they are giving themselves permission, which is all good, to reach out and ask for help. And a lot of people who have been working from home are reporting that they're much more anxious and feeling much, much more disconnected. They miss their colleagues. You know, we all complain, especially those of us who live in New York City, you know, going on the subways and taking public transportation. And yet there is an energy that makes us all feel connected. And now that we don't have this, although things are definitely starting to open up, people are a lot more anxious. And then on the other hand, there are a lot of people, including myself, I must say, and also my husband, where we've really gotten used to a daily routine. I happen to see all of my patients on Zoom or on Facebook Live. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Do I miss having people come to my office here in New York City and in East Hampton? Absolutely, yes. But you kind of have to adapt. And, of course, there hasn't been a choice. And what I really do miss, I must say, is going to the Progressive Radio Network studio. I miss seeing Jesse, the producer, and John, and walking into the studio. And, of course, as I listen to the shows on the Progressive Radio Network archives, the shows are in the archives the day after the live show. I'm very self-critical, and I think that the sound quality is not as good. So there have been a lot of changes, a lot of modifications that we've all had to make. You know, other things that have happened, and I'm hoping that there is going to be a change, is that there has been an increase in alcohol consumption, about 75%. That is a lot. That is a big change. And wine, 66%. But now that summer is officially, upon us, hopefully people are going to be getting out and exercising more, of course, keeping our social distance, and we'll start to feel better both physically and mentally. But I do think it's a good time to do a mental health check-in for yourself and ask yourself, how are you really doing? How is my mood? And I have days when I feel down, but over the past year, I haven't experienced a period of depressed mood that lasted longer than 2 weeks. So that's a good thing. But if you are finding, like many of my patients, that their anxiety and their depression is worsening, then you need to ask yourself, what are you going to do about it? And what is your depression and anxiety and you're drinking too much and you're eating too much? What is that all about? And trying to get to the root of the problem. And, what I've been seeing more and more is that there's so many more online possibilities for people to get counseling. And, of course, if you are going to do that, you really do need to do your research and make sure that the counselor or the therapist that you are choosing is really somebody who is professionally qualified. And it's also a time to look at our relationships. Of course, it's always a time to look at our relationships and see, really how things are going. And in any relationship, there are going to be a lot of ups and downs. And you know what the smart couples do? And we're not always smart, and most of us make lots and lots of mistakes. And, one of the things that Tim and I try to do if we are, disagreeing about something and we find that our communication is really getting off track, we remind ourselves to take a break. And, of course, Jim is in television, I'm in television and radio, to do a take two and try to do it better. But it is not about bearing. It's not about bearing our emotions, and it is not about bearing our problems. It is always about, it's got to be always about finding the ways and finding the time to acknowledge and address and resolve our problems in our relationships and in our own individual lives as best as possible. And putting things in the back burner and putting things under a carpet or in the drawer will work maybe for a very, very short period of time. But sooner or later, as I've seen, the pot will eventually, boil over. So when looking at our mental health check-in, we're looking at our mood, we're looking at our relationships, we're looking at our professional and financial stability as well. And I think that what's happened in the last several months, I see it as an opportunity for all of us in all areas of our life to really reflect and reevaluate and reset. And you might really be surprised at what you are discovering, changes that you may want to make in your life. And when you're doing your mental health check-in, you want to look at your substance abuse, use or abuse, your temper, your physical health, your sleep, your diet, your self-care, your goals, so that this has been a time where we have actually been forced. We've been forced to stop because of the I hear that a lot of people are looking at things very, very differently than they did before. I don't know how many of you were aware of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. The march was on June the 20th, the March on Washington. And it was really about to speak the truth, to challenge the distorted moral narrative. So we're not just talking about our own egocentricity or our own narcissism. There are larger issues. There are larger societal and political issues that we do really need to think about. And Bishop Dr. William Barber, he talks about this as being a call in this nation to the ethic of love and justice. And we need to think about all of these things. The police brutality, of course, we're all aware of the murder of George Floyd by the police officers. Hopefully we are starting to think more about the poverty in this country, not just for blacks, but there are millions of people in the United States who are living in poverty, and that the pandemic perhaps was a reminder to all of us that we need to look around and think about other people other than ourselves, other than our Zoom, other than where we're going to go on vacation. And of course, then make some decisions about what, if anything, do we personally want to do. Some wonderful, wonderful news that happened last week is that the Supreme Court decision protecting LGBTQ rights. Well, that was a long, long time in coming, and it's certainly going to change the narrative for millions of LGBT men and women. And Black Lives Matter, and of course, all lives matter. And this time is really forcing us to hopefully look inward at our own biases and our own stereotypes and our own feelings and behaviors in terms of racism. And I know that for many, many people, you get up in the morning and you want your children to go to school. Of course, hopefully children are actually going to be going to school in the fall. And I think that, you know, most people were so preoccupied with our own lives that we don't care about any of this. And I am hoping, and I know that I listened to Dr. Cornel West, and of course, Bishop Dr. William Barber, and I listened to my husband, who is the host of the Radical Imagination television show. And it is a time for all of us. I think it is a great time for all of us to really sit back and reevaluate not only our own lives and our own relationships, but this is a wake-up call for all of us. And I think that we all need to be thinking, of course, the election is in November, and we all need to vote, and we need to make sure that we are going to rid ourselves of Donald Trump. And we need to, each of us, really think about how to create, what can each of us do as individuals, how to create a kinder and gentler society. And this is something, my friends, that is very, very important to all of us, even though I think that probably for the majority of people, these issues are things that we rarely, rarely think about. But there was a piece, and I love this, that was written by Bill Gates. And he says, what is the coronavirus, this time in our lives, this pandemic? what is it really teaching us? And he says it is a reminder that we are all equal, regardless of our culture, and vulnerable, I might add, regardless of our culture, our religion, our occupation, our financial situation, or how famous we are. This disease treats us all equally. Perhaps we should too. It's reminding us that we are all connected, and we are. And something that affects one person has an effect on another. It is reminding us that the false borders that we have put up have a little value, as this virus does not need a passport, even though we have found that certainly there has been a disproportionate number of poor and disadvantaged people who have actually contracted the virus. It is reminding us by oppressing us for a short time of those in this world whose whole life is spent in oppression. It is also reminding us of how precious our health is and how we have moved to neglect it through eating nutrient-poor manufactured food and drinking water that is contaminated with chemicals upon chemicals. And if we don't look after our health, we will, of course, get sick, and not just from the coronavirus. It is reminding us of the shortness of life, and I talk about this a lot. I probably talk about it too much. The passing of time and of what is most important for us to do, which is to help each other, our moral conscience, especially those who are old or sick or disadvantaged. Our purpose is not just to go to the store and buy more toilet rolls. It is reminding us of how materialistic our society has become and how, when in times of difficulty, we remember that it is the essentials that we need, and that's the food and water and medicine and connection, human connection, as opposed to the luxuries that we sometimes unnecessarily give value to. It is reminding us of how important our family and home life is and how much we have neglected this. I think that that is something that I hope has also been a real wake-up call to people who've been forced to gather because of the pandemic, that we realize that in the final analysis, and I have been saying this for years and years and years, it is not about the bigger, it is not about the better, it is not about the more, it is not about how many square feet your house is or whether or not you happen to live on the water. It is about love and it is about connection. And this virus is forcing us back into our houses so that we can rebuild them into homes, not just places where we check out and we go to sleep, where we really understand the value of family and friends. It is also reminding us that our true work is not our job. And isn't that the truth? That is what we do. Remember, our jobs are what we do, not what we were created to do, and not who we are. Our true work is to look after each other, to protect each other, and to be a benefit to one another. And I wish that I could be in each of your homes right now and just ask you, what do you actually think about all of this? Because I think these are real, real words of wisdom and what it is really all about. It is reminding us to keep our egos in check. It is reminding us that no matter how great we think we are or how great others think we are, a virus can bring our world to a standstill, and so it has. It is reminding us that the power of free will is in our hands. We can choose to cooperate and help each other, to share, to give, to help, and to support each other, or we can choose to be selfish, to hoard, and to look after only ourselves. And indeed, it is difficulties that bring out our true colors. I mean, I have always, always found this to be the truth, that unfortunately, what I have seen and observed as a psychotherapist and sex therapist now for over 35 years, that it is the time of crisis when people are forced to really take a hard, honest look at their lives and their relationships. And since we are still in this crisis mode, I think that it is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us to reevaluate everything in our lives, our morality, our relationships, who we are, how we want to live, and to really find ways to bring out our true colors as human beings. It is also reminding us that we can be patient or we can panic. We can either understand that this type of situation has happened many, many times before in history and will pass, or we can panic and see it as the end of the world and consequently cause ourselves more harm than good. It is also reminding us that this can either be an end or a new beginning, and I really, really am so optimistic that this can and will be a new beginning. This can be a time of reflection and understanding where we learn from our mistakes, or it could be the start of a cycle which will continue until we finally learn the lessons that we are meant to. I mean, I wonder, you know, if you're looking at policing and stopping and police brutality, how many people before the recent death, ever even thought about it? And now we have a lot of people, including a former guest and friend of mine and Jim's Manuel Gomez, trying to introduce bills to change legislation in terms of how police are going to be funded and what the consequences to police are going to be when they step over a certain line. So, I mean, these are issues. I mean, look at all the protests that have been taking place in the last several weeks. I believe, and I'd like to think that it's true, that people's eyes have been forced to really open up and look at life and look at our political situation and social situation in ways that we normally don't. So yes, I believe that we have the potential to really have a new beginning, the time of reflection and understanding when we learn from our mistakes, or it can be the start of a cycle which will continue until we finally learn the lessons we are meant to. I mean, things have really been shaken up, which I think is a good thing. And what we are actually planning now to do, to put into action, remains to be seen. It is also reminding us that the earth is sick, and is reminding us that we need to look at the rate of deforestation just as urgently as we look at the speed at which toilet rolls are disappearing off the shelves. We are sick because our home is sick. And it is also reminding us that after every difficulty, there is always ease. Life is cyclical, and it is just a phase in this great cycle. We do not need to panic. This too shall pass. Whereas many see the coronavirus as a great disaster, Bill Gates says, I prefer to see it as a great corrector. a long, long, these are my words, a long, long overdue corrector. And he says, this is sent to remind us of the important lessons that we seem to have forgotten, you know, in our day-to-day life. And it is up to us if we will learn them or not. And this is really going to remain to be seen. I mean, even in terms of the upcoming election, have we learned anything? You know, 53% of white women voted Donald Trump into office. So what have we learned? And, of course, with Bolton's book, and there are a lot of things, a lot of leaked information, which is a great thing, that is coming to our attention. What are we going to do? And I frequently talk about lessons to be learned. You know, what have we learned if we have found ourselves time and time and time again in toxic, dysfunctional relationships? What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about finding a way to vote and rid ourselves of the tyrant, the psychopath, the narcissist who is currently the president of the United States? And I think that it is very, very easy for all of us to become complacent. But now is the time, and I hear this oftentimes, you know, from people in the progressive movement, that this is our time. We can actually do things to really, really change the agenda and make a huge, huge difference in our lives and in the lives of people in this country. There was an article in Time Magazine moving in now to talk about relationships by Lana Docterman, and she was writing that the coronavirus is changing how we date. Experts think that the shifts may be permanent. Skype, Zoom, FaceTime, of course, telephone, and that meeting people online is going to become more and more the norm. I believe, since this is our new reality, that this is going to hopefully force people to really get to know each other. I mean, since we can't see each other, of course, now that things are opening up, you know, people will be meeting with masks and with the 6-foot social distancing requirements. But I think that this is a good time for people to ask a lot of hard questions that we normally we don't want to ask because we're afraid to ask, or we don't want to hear the real answers, to find out who your potential date or your potential romantic partner really is. And so the fact that we're not rushing into to meeting people these days and rushing in to have sex before the first date, this is really an opportunity to slow down the dating process and do an excellent assessment. Of course, we cannot assess chemistry and we cannot assess touch until we actually have physical contact with the person, but at least you'll get a really good understanding what this person feels about all kinds of things, goals and values and parenting and children and money, and whether or not this person is really open to talking about the tough, tough issues, how well or how badly this person is able to communicate and solve problems. And you should give yourself permission. You know, when I had Lindsay on the show last week, and I was telling her about my formula based on the book that teaches all of us, you know, how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you. She says, well, gee, that's tough to do. You know, how do you ask the tough questions? Well, you ask the tough questions carefully, but you do ask them. So you're not going to say to somebody, did you grow up in a terrible family, and did your parents either abuse you or did they abuse each other? What you're going to want to say is something like, well, you know, when I was growing up, I grew up in a family where my parents really didn't communicate much about anything. And I observed that for example, my father drank too much, or my mother was depressed. What was it like in your family? And that's a nice way. It's a loving way. It's a benign way. It's an important way for you to find out about your partner. And if you're wanting to find out about a person's substance abuse issues, if they have any, you know, you might say, well, you know, for me, I don't drink. I drink seltzer water, and I drink raspberry juice. You know, what about you? So that you're going through a process of discovery, you know, really the real important questions. So that you're in a position then to decide whether or not, whether you really even want to meet this person face to face. You know, I've told the story before, but I think it's worth telling again. You know, I had a patient who came in, and she was depressed, despite the fact the first thing she told me was that she was in this great, great relationship with this man. And so I asked her, I said, so tell me about your boyfriend. Well, believe it or not, they had texted and sexted and had talked on the phone somewhat, although not a lot, for almost a year, but that they had never met. And I was really taken aback by that. And I said, well, listen, your homework, my dear, is to meet and, you know, get together for a drink or to have a cup of coffee. And they did meet, and they never saw each other again. So I'm not exactly sure what went on for that whole year, what they were doing and what they were talking about and what they were texting and sexting about. But the real issues, the really important conversations, obviously did not happen. So that now, and I'm looking at another piece from the New York Times, remember our first date. I gazed into your screen. So we know now more and more and more that online dating and, you know, meeting people online on the various different dating sites is really going to become more and more and more of a norm. So at least we should take the opportunity and not waste our time and find a way to really get to know the person. And if you're not sure what questions to ask, and if you're not sure what goes into a really good assessment, then you need to read my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, and you can buy it on Amazon. And it's kind of like having me in your wallet or your purse, taking you through the process of assessment. So at the end of the assessment, you are going to have a very clear picture. Of course, you're going to want to meet the person. You're going to have a very, very clear picture about who this person is and who this person is not. There was another piece that I wanted to talk with you about because it's been coming up more and more and more in my sessions about social isolation. And this was a piece that was actually in Psychology Today, you know, the magazine Psychology Today, What You Need to Know About the Loneliness Epidemic. We live in an era in which communication seems simpler than times of the past. In essence, a coworker is one email away, a friend is one text away, and a loved one is one video chat away. And although communication may be easier and faster, connection, real connection, may still be complicated. Therefore, despite the reputation for practical societal advancement, our technologically advanced time is also being linked to a loneliness epidemic. And in the last 50 years, you may or may not be surprised to hear this, the rate of loneliness has doubled in the United States. In a survey of over 20,000 American adults, it was found that almost half of respondents reported feeling alone, left out, and isolated, over and above the Zoom and the Skype and the Facebook Live. And further, one in four Americans shared that they really, rarely feel understood. And one in five people believe that they rarely or never feel close to people. And obviously, there is a significant impact, not only to our mental health, but to our physical health as well. And what the studies have found is that loneliness has been associated with cardiovascular problems and premature death. Lonelier individuals are less likely to achieve quality sleep. Lonely individuals experience reductions in reasoning and creativity. And in addition to these reduced abilities, loneliness affects workplace productivity, as lonely individuals report less job satisfaction and are more likely to face unemployment. Loneliness is commonly correlated with mental health concerns, of course, such as anxiety and depression and suicidality. And similarly, loneliness is often associated with poor coping mechanisms such as compulsive technology use, smoking, and self-harm. You know, which leads me in to a couple of articles. You know, who would have ever thought that we were going to be encouraging people to be on the computer where they would be having, in quote, conversations with artificial intelligence chat pots. And this piece is in the New York Times. It was just a couple of days ago. They have helped users cope with loneliness during the pandemic. But on the other hand, there are experts who are really skeptical about where the apps might lead. Now, I had never heard the term before. So when the coronavirus pandemic reached this woman's neighborhood, infecting her garbage man and sending everyone else into quarantine, this woman was already feeling. She had just split with her boyfriend, reaching the end of her first serious relationship. She was not in a good place. And then sitting alone in her bedroom, this is in the article, she stumbled onto an internet video describing a smartphone app called Replica. I don't know whether you ever heard of Replica, but I just read about it in this article. And the app's sole purpose, the video said, is to be her friend. So this woman was skeptical, of course, but the app was free. And it offered what she needed most, conversation. She spent the day chatting with the app via text messages, mostly about her problems, hopes, anxieties. And the next day she paid an $8 monthly fee so that she could actually talk with it as if she were chatting with someone on telephone. And this is really interesting that in April of this year, at the height of the coronavirus pandemic, 500,000 people downloaded Replica, which is the largest monthly gain in its three-year history. Traffic to the app nearly doubled. People were hungry for companionship, and the technology was improving, inching the world closer to the human meets machine relationships portrayed in science fiction films. Who would have ever dreamed that we were actually moving toward having conversations in the world of artificial intelligence. And I think years ago, I probably would have been very critical of all of this and said, well, this is not real. But I feel, certainly as a therapist, that we need to do whatever it is that we need to do that is in our best interest so that we will not feel socially isolated and that we will feel connected. And if on occasion it is with an app, so be it. I mean, better still, you can reach out to your church, your synagogue, professional groups, so that at least you're seeing real people and having real human conversations on Zoom or on Skype. But for many, many people, this is probably going to become more and more and more of an option. I was actually kind of taken aback, you know, by this article. And there are researchers who study people who interact with technology are very concerned and that we're spending all of our time or so much of our time behind our screens that it is not surprising that when we actually get into an opportunity to talk to real people, that people don't have the muscles, the emotional muscles, the communication skills needed to have real dialogue with real people. But I feel that loneliness is something that we need to do everything that we possibly can to combat. And if talking to these chatbots give us some relief and decrease our feelings of loneliness and depression and anxiety, then so be it. I too am concerned that we are going to increasingly be spending more and more and more time in front of our screens, and that we are going to be self-sabotaging in terms of actually getting out of our houses and getting out of our apartments to try to connect with human beings in more real life situations. But this has certainly been a very, very interesting period of time. And there are a lot of online possibilities for people. In fact, there was another article in the Times. The headline was, "You look like you could use someone to talk to," so that we are encouraging people to, when we're feeling lonely and down and despondent, to give ourselves permission to reach out and connect. You know, I'm looking at the clock here in my office on the Upper West Side here in New York City. I do miss going to the studio at the Progressive Radio Network, and I can't believe that the time has literally come and gone again. And I want to thank you all for listening and for your comments. And of course, if you have any questions, you can always leave me a question on the Progressive Radio Network voicemail. And that number is 862-800-6805. And I want to end the show, as I usually do, with my favorite song. And that is, "What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love." And